I have calmed and quieted my soul. Like a weaned child, my soul is like a weaned child. Having spent the last 7 years with young ones, frequently nursing, I know all very well their demands. You've probably seen it, and you may even notice if you're here in person this morning that our youngest is not with us, and he's home with Dad this morning, watching from Zoom if he's not napping. Because when he is here and when Mom is up front, he thinks it is his turn to be with Mom and his turn to do all the talking or to have all of Mom's attention. He is not a weaned child. Some editions will read that my soul is like the weaned child with me. What a beautiful image. And in the Hebrew culture, that weaned child was probably 3, 4, 5. The child just starting to sit nicely with Mom, coming to enjoy that presence and that time together. Interestingly enough, that child who is still nursing has a special place too. There's a time where we need that kind of nursing, that kind of attention. It is good and right for a young one to need those things. It is as we grow that we want to have our hearts become like that of a weaned child, where we can sit and enjoy the presence of God. So I want to ask this morning, how is it with your soul? Early Wesleyan Christ followers used to make this their first question they asked each other when they would gather for group meetings. How is it with your soul? It's a question that might catch us off guard. It's not something we see very often or hear very often. How are you? Oh, I'm fine. We've got that one down, whether we're feeling fine or not. So how is it with your soul? Psalm 131 is attributed to be a psalm of David. It is listed in a group of psalms called the Psalms of Ascent. The idea seems to be that they were going to Jerusalem, to the temple, that they would use these psalms to prepare their hearts for worship. They're also vague enough to be easily passed and used at different times, so that we too can use it as we prepare our hearts for worship, as we prepare our hearts not only for a Sunday service worship, but worship throughout the week. The psalm was written in a time where worship of Baal was very tempting for many of the people, and so the psalms point our attention to Yahweh, to the exclusive worship of our God. Psalm 131 is one of only 9 psalms that are called the Psalm of Confidence. It's a type of psalm that highlights the trust we can place in God as protector. And these psalms are known for their striking use of metaphors to describe God, just like we saw the image of the weaned child with the mother. So let's start again from the beginning of the psalm. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. My heart is not proud. It is not presuming that I can master the whole of creation or control its destiny or design, or that I can run the moral code of life. These are all things that alienate us from God. And I wonder how many people, as they would hear the psalmist say these words, would think back to that story. That Tower of Babel, that big tower that was built in an attempt to get to heaven. And while it may be easy for us to say, I'm not building a tower, I'm not trying to build a stairway to heaven, I can't help but wonder in what ways is it that we are trying to take God's place, that we are trying to be God and push God out of our lives. In the story, they used brick, man-made brick, that was not as hard as stone. And it makes me wonder, did they think that they could build something better than God's natural product? And it makes me wonder, do I think I can do things better than God's way too? What they built was most likely a ziggurat, a common Babylonian structure, most often built as temples. Kind of like pyramids with steps up the side, probably about 300 feet tall and just as wide. That would make them the focal point of the city. All eyes would be drawn to this. It would be a great human achievement to build such a tall tower, but the attention was being drawn to their own perceived greatness. I wonder in what ways I'm trying to draw attention to my own perceived greatness as well. Is it a particular house or car, an admirable career, a trendy fashion or a sought-after group of friends, a popular social media presence? What are the things that I do to try and make myself seem great? While these things may not be inherently evil themselves, they're not intended to replace God's rightful and good position as Lord of our lives. And I must admit, I particularly like the way the story tells the ending. So often we think of the tower of God being angry and frustrated and saying, "This is enough of them trying to copy me. They've got to go. They've got to be scattered." But what if instead this was God's love and compassion, knowing that it wouldn't be good for them to rule the earth in their own broken and egotistical ways? What lofty thoughts do we need to offer to our Lord here this morning? The psalmist writes, "I do not occupy myself with things too great or too marvelous for me. I have calmed and quieted my soul. My soul is like..." How would you finish that off? How would you end that sentence today? The psalmist writes, "My soul is like a weaned child with its mother, or perhaps like the weaned child that is here with me." You can envision that there. How would you describe your soul today? "My soul is like..." As you imagine that, I want to continue to invite your imagination here this morning. Imagine yourself as a child on God's lap, being assured of God's loving presence. And how is it that you respond? "O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore." And if I could take the liberty, could we put our names in there this morning? O people of First Baptist Church, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore. O Jennifer, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore. Tim, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore. Would you like to turn to your neighbor and say, and you can use the words in your bulletin from Psalm 131, the last line there. Or if you're on Zoom or watching, would you insert your own name if there's no one there that can insert your name for you? And insert your name and share with one another. Hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore. But what about when the tough times come? How is it that we trust? How is it that we quiet our souls then? It can be easy at times to want to say, "Oh, we're trusting Jesus. Nothing bad's going to happen." But then there are those situations in life where we've trusted Jesus and brokenness has still been very real. We can be like a child. Like the child who thinks daddy can fix everything. And especially that's easy to think of when we think of the image of God as all-powerful. But what if instead we trust God as the one who redeems? Not immediately fixing all that is broken or keeping things from breaking, but God as one who redeems what is broken, who makes His presence known in the midst of brokenness, and who keeps us company as we grieve. Keeping with the analogies here that seem so rich and helpful as we try and understand something as vague as trust, I want you to imagine a parent who has a child approaching them, "Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, my toy is broken. I am so upset, and it seems like it's the end of the world." Have you ever had those moments where you are maybe a little bit tired yourself, and it would be easy to say, "It's not a big deal. It doesn't matter. It's just a toy. We can replace it." But to that child, it's significant. To that child, that toy meant something special. And when I think of God grieving with us, I think of God like the patient adult grieving with that child. Even though God knows the bigger picture, can say, "It'll be fine. We can work this out." Instead, God is with us in our brokenness, crying with us, walking with us, moving forward, inviting us to declare that even though there is brokenness, even though there is pain from our past, that God can redeem. "Oh, I have calmed and quieted my soul." It sounds like a past tense, one-time thing, but it feels like an ongoing practice, something that I need to do all the time. And it feels like something I cannot will or make happen, that I cannot say, "Sit still, my soul. Be quiet, that's enough," and my soul will just listen. Rather, I need to come in prayer. I need to study the word. I need to examine my heart, and I need to practice being still so that there may be space for God to bring the peace and the quieting of soul that is beyond what I can do myself. I'm reminded, having started with a building story, let's end off with another one. Our passage in Matthew comes from the imagery around building a house on a rock. As we listen to Jesus' teaching and put into practice, it is wise to do so. It is wise to listen to Jesus' teaching, and it is wise to build a house on a rock. Whether you've read The Three Little Piggies, whether you've constructed real-life building, whether you built Lego, you know that a solid foundation is important. That a house built on sand will not stand. It will not withstand the storms of life. In the same way, we quiet our souls by building our lives on the solid rock, by building our lives on Jesus himself. When I think of a house on the rock, I think of my childhood years growing up and the special house that my grandparents built. My grandparents had moved from Germany, and after retiring, they felt God calling them to leave the greater Vancouver area and move to the mountains in Whistler and hand-build a house that would be a house of prayer, a retreat center. That house, as grandkids, we did not understand the significance of all the prayer and the meetings there at that time, but we were amazed. It was up the hill to get to the garage, and then you go up the hill further to get into the entrance, and it was a three-story, beautiful wooden house, nicely looked after in the true way that my Nana would keep her house clean, tidy, proper, even with eight grandkids running around somehow. And we would spend the time there. And looking up, as we went up the three stories, the back of the house was right into the mountains, where you'd have the trees and the blueberry bushes where you could go pick some wild berries. And that was a solid house, built with intentionality, built on a solid foundation, meant to last. But little did we know or understand how much more meaningful it was. It was a place where people would come and get away, where they would quiet their souls and spend some time examining their hearts. And my grandparents had been given the gift of praying with others through these times, giving space for them to encounter God. And as I grew up, I heard more and more their stories. Stories who would say, I knew your grandparents, and it was such a precious time. And whether or not they made it to the Whistler house during that time, it didn't seem to matter where they were, because their lives were built on a solid foundation. And those places of prayer could be anywhere. And I remember how they have been prayer warriors for me, how they've been listening ears for me. They had spent a lot of time quieting their soul. And in moments as a young adult, when my soul wasn't so quiet and I wasn't sure what to do next, they had a place in their hearts, a calmness of being that allowed them to be present and helped me then hear and quiet my soul. So this morning, would you join with me in reading the Psalm 131 one more time? And then we'll take a moment of silence. And I invite you just to have silent prayer until we sing our song, our hymn of response, The Solid Rock. So let's pray. Let's begin with a prayer of Psalm 131. O Lord, my heart is not lifted up. My eyes are not raised too high. I do not occupy myself with things too great and too marvelous for me. I have calmed and quieted my soul, like a weaned child with its mother. My soul within me is like a weaned child. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time on and forevermore.